Afternoon, everyone. It is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2005. This is the House Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. We have two work sessions to deal with today. This time we'll open a work session on 2101 relating to Oregon security. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in front of you is a memo for myself, which I'll go through, an amendment, which is basically deletes everything in 2101 and replaces parts of what's in the bill and makes other changes. It is not a page and line amendment. It is, I hate to use the term gut and stuff, but because it doesn't, it does take everything out of the bill but put some of it back in. So the memo, what I'll go through, reflects the amendment. As introduced, as amended through the engross, 2101 established the Office of Homeland Security as a separate state agency, let the governor appoint a director, and it basically transferred the Office of Emergency Management, State Fire Marshal, and Criminal Justice Services Division from the state police to the new office. The amendment takes all sections, which are the majority of the bill in terms of its length, relating to the creation of the new Office of Homeland Security as a separate state agency, and removes them from the bill. So there is no new separate Homeland Security agency created, and those units stay within the state police as the budget that you've passed out of here not too long ago assumes. Any reference to the bill in terms of Office of Emergency or Office of Homeland Security that had been part of the bill in those sections that are retained are generally returned to the Office of Emergency Management or the State Police, depending on the language in the section. There is the bill did create an Oregon Homeland Security Council, which is retained in the amendment. This council will be chaired by the governor. It is basically his planning and response mechanism in terms of getting advice, briefings, and planning for Homeland Security-related issues. It includes legislators, which I think dates back to the a suggestion made by the Joint Subcommittee, of which many of you were members of. So that council includes legislators, the Adjutant General, Superintendent of State Police, and other members, including local officials and key state agency heads that are appointed by the governor. The only change would be that the Office of Emergency Management is the primary staffing for this council. The bill did abolish the Interagency Hazard Communications Council, which deals with community right to know. The amendment continues that, except transfers what had been the bill in the bill relating to the Oregon Homeland Security Office being the primary agency absorbing those functions of the council. In this case, it becomes the state fire marshal absorbing those functions. My understanding is that this council has not been very active and that the state fire marshal generally does responsibilities for this council anyways at this time. The bill overall integrates portions, in its entirety, Senate Bill 817 that dealt with emergency communications. That establishes a state interoperability executive council. This had already been part of 2101, and it is also included in Senate Bill 817. This council is to develop an interoperable communications plan with the goal of solving the issue and addressing it within 6 years. They are to develop strategies for state local government, develop standards to promote consistent development of wireless communication systems, identify short and long-term technology and policy solutions, and recommend where required or needed recommendations in terms of legislation. The only change that the amendment makes in this case is to clarify the role of legislators. They are also appointed as members of this council, and their role is clarified as being advisory as a separation of powers issue that council brought forward and is an issue. On the back page, the of the memo, the bill also adds references to federal Homeland Security directives. That is retained in the amendment, but makes references to the State Police or the Office of Emergency Management where appropriate. And finally, it designates anyone accepted by the Office of Emergency Management or an emergency, a local emergency management agency, as they are designated as an agent of the state for the purposes of the Tort Claims Act, which provides them basically liability coverage. The other portion of Senate Bill 817, which is part of this bill and has been added by the amendment, is the development of a public safety wireless infrastructure replacement plan. Basically, you have a number of agencies, corrections, state police, forestry, transportation, that have wireless systems, much of which is out of date. This group, led by the Office of Emergency Management, is to put together a plan to replace that system and upgrade it and consolidate it. And as a result, they are to report back on the development of this plan a number of times, the Emergency Board, the Joint Interim Committee on Information Management and Technology, during this upcoming interim. There is an other funds expenditure limitation for this function of $382,000 included in the bill. Those are federal Homeland Security dollars. The reason that there are other funds in terms of limitation is those monies are sent through the Criminal Justice Services Division and comes to OEM as other funds. Mr. Chair, that is a summary of the bill as amended.
Thank you. Representative Wisnett, Chair would accept an amendment motion to the bill, and then we can discuss the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee accept the amendments from LFO on HB 2101A. As briefed by Mr. Wilson.
Representative Wisnett moves the conceptual amendments discussed and described by LFO analyst Doug Wilson.
Mr. Chair, really, actually, it's not conceptual. It is the A14s that are attached to your document, and I just provided a summary of them.
All right, so the amendment, am I correct, is that the motion is amended to read that the A14 amendments to be attached and become part of and adopted into House Bill 2101. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So that's the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, the A14 amendments are now part of House Bill 2101. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that the committee move to the full House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendations, HB 2101, with the A14 amendments.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2101 as amended to the full House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there discussion? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hannah and I Representative Hansen worked a lot of this in the subcommittee. I think it's important that the state has a homeland defense agency. There was some, I know this was part of some negotiations, and there was also discussions about where it was supposed to be located. We're being unique here again in that Oregon is the only state that will not have this agency under state police or the military department. It'll give us some challenges we'll have to face, and I'm sure that the state's up to it. I look forward to working with them in the creating of this agency. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I want to make sure that the members of the subcommittee understand that the amendment does not create a separate Office of Homeland Security. It keeps it in its current structure as part of the state police, but does create groups that are advisory or implementing groups.
Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so moved. Representative Wisnett, would you carry that?
Thank you.
And that ends the work session on House Bill 2101, and we open a work session on Senate Bill 818. Thank you, Mr. President.
I know. throws me off, too.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
If you would give us some orientation on this bill and proposed amendments, Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Senate Bill 818C has been referred to budget from the House State and Federal Affairs Committee. The original bill, the original Senate Bill 818, dealt with faith-based pilot programs with the Department of Human Services. The House State and Federal Affairs Committee amended the bill to add a pharmaceutical patient assistance program and then some changes in child welfare practice, as well as an emergency clause. What I have handed out in that you should have in front of you is the staff measure summary that came from the policy committee, the Committee on State and Federal Affairs, our fiscal impact statement on the bill, the C engrossed version as it came out of that committee, and then we have proposed amendments to the bill that would implement or appropriate the funding to reflect the fiscal impact of the bill as it stands in its C engrossed version. Since we've prepared this information, there has been a subsequent amendment that I've also handed out. This is the C-20 amendments, and those would delete one section of the bill, and then we would change our fiscal impact numbers and our appropriation numbers accordingly. So that's sort of an overview, and I can walk you through in more detail. What I'd like to use as the vehicle to do that is our fiscal impact statement, because I've tried to describe what the various sections of the bills are and where the fiscal impact is in that.
So go through that. Let's skip over that section of those provisions which would be deleted by the Dash 20 amendments, and we can deal with those separately.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will note which sections that would apply to. So on our fiscal impact statement, starting in about the middle of the first page, there is a summary there. It addresses three major program areas: the faith-based pilot programs, the pharmaceutical patient assistance program, and then the child welfare practice changes. And in all, as it came out of the House committee, there's a $1,677,343 general fund impact and the same federal funds. And I will focus on where those impacts show up. Section 1 to 3 are basically the original bill, deals with continuing the faith-based or community assistance pilot programs. Department of Human Services has established a program. There was a sunset in the original legislation, so that sunset is extended, and there's a directive for them to continue that existing pilot program and expand that to a second site. And so there's no fiscal impact from that provision of the bill, or those provisions of the bill. Section 4 establishes a pharmaceutical patient assistance program. I should say it allows the establishment of such a program with the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research, which is organizationally in the Department of Administrative Services.
Let me ask a question on that. Is that any part of that, part of the transition to the federal prescription drug program that's going to be starting next January, or is this specifically separate from that, dealing only with the reduced cost, free cost from pharmaceutical companies?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure the exact answer to that. I believe that people who are transitioning over could access this program if it were available. It's not restricted, I guess, is the wording that I would use, that if the program is established, that anyone that needs help with getting those benefits under the assistance that the pharmaceutical companies provide could utilize that. And we note that the fiscal impact is indeterminate, because although that language is permissive, it does allow the office to accept contributions and donations. We have no idea how much that might be or how that would be expended. The legislation does require that they contract out for that, and we're expecting that if funds are received to implement that program, that they would come back to the emergency board, or depending on the timing, the next legislative session, to get it up and running. Then sections 5 through 21 were amendments that the House State and Federal Affairs Committee added. There are a number of changes in child welfare practice, although some of these provisions put into statute things that are already in operation either administratively or under Oregon administrative rule. So I will focus on the sections that we determined had a particular fiscal impact. And the first one on, if you look at the top of page 3 of the discussion, is section 13, which directs the department to employ an independent consultant to help it develop some practice guidelines, implement a system that can better match up children in foster care with the ability and the capacity of the foster parent. And that is where that fiscal impact comes in, is in development of such a system. And so DHS reports that it believes, based on estimates through Portland State University, that it would cost $40,000 general fund and $40,000 federal fund to get that system set up and operative. Three paragraphs down from that, we talk about Section 16, which is where the major fiscal impact in the C and gross version of the bill, we expect that would occur. And that is because part one provision of Section 16 requires that supervisors meet quarterly with children and parents where home visits are part of the case plan. So what the department has indicated is that based on 13,500 cases where the case plan is part of that, or the home visit is part of the case plan, that requiring an hour of work for each of those cases quarterly is the equivalent of over 54,000 hours of work, and that they would need to add additional staff to meet that workload demand. And so with that assumption, the cost is almost $1.6 million general fund, same amount of federal funds, assuming that those positions could get hired and on board by January 2006.
Am I not correct?
No.
These are not to be left in if the Dash 20 amendments were accepted.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the Dash 20 amendments that you have before you would delete the section of that subsection in Section 16, which requires that quarterly meeting. And so that fiscal impact, if you adopt those amendments, that fiscal impact would be eliminated. Then the other area of fiscal impact is in Section 21, so the last paragraph on page 3 of our analysis. And this is a section that lists 11 different areas where the department is to develop a plan and come back to with a report by November 1, 2006. And there are some costs involved with that, to the extent that they will need some additional research help on some of those areas. And so they've estimated almost $85,000 general fund and $85,000 federal fund to contract, again, with Portland State University to help them do that work. We do note that although the current biennium cost to develop those plans is relatively modest in the overall scheme of things, depending on what the plans recommend or how they're implemented, there could be significant costs that you would need to review in 07, 09 and forward. So that is our summary of the fiscal impact of the bill. If the Dash C-20 amendments are adopted by the subcommittee, then the fiscal impact would be reduced from the amount shown on your amendments to $124,915 general fund and $124,915 federal funds.
Okay. Well, that's a substantial difference.
Yes.
All right. Are there questions on the proposed amendments, which the proposed amendment is the Dash 20, and as you would note, it says in the C engrossed Senate Bill 818, go to page 9 and delete lines 3 through 6. Those are the ones that require the department to have quarterly meetings, and that's the provision that would generate the additional $1.4 million in fiscal. Representative Hansen, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one question. It relates to Section 17, and that's the language concerning the when the governor's imposed a hiring freeze. And I'm a little concerned in terms of whether we might be overstepping the separation of legislative and executive authority there. What it starts off, notwithstanding any other provisions of law, the Department of Human Services continue protective service workers when the governor has imposed restrictions or limitations on hiring. What are you aware of what other provisions of law they're referring to that might give me more comfort in terms of language?
I am not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm not familiar with that either. I will say that I believe during the last hiring freeze that the governor did provide for particular exceptions for some positions, and that I believe child welfare workers were one of those exceptions. So I don't
know. That was my understanding that certainly they can do that. The other one is I'm wondering in terms of the relationship between the director of DHS and the governor. If the governor asks the director of DHS not to hire, if this legislation would have any impact on that, or would interfere with that ability for the governor to be able to get his directives carried out.
In reality, there's no requirement that certain people are hired, and so the director would utilize his discretion. This says that the DHS may continue to hire child protective services workers when the governor has imposed a restriction or limitation on hiring as a result of fiscal restraints. So basically the legislature is exercising our power to say there will be no requirement by the governor not to hire based on fiscal policy. And so that has been found to be within the legislature's purview to be able to make that kind of law, whether or not a director is going to contradict the governor who might say not to do it is that's an issue
and
application.
The other thing I'm not aware of governors putting on hiring freezes that are that restrictive that if there's a critical need for a certain type of worker that a hiring freeze can't be circumvented in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of torn between thinking whether or not this is necessary or whether it doesn't do that much harm.
Actually, at this point, this is already in the bill,
yeah.
And it's just a question on the decision made by the Committee on State and Federal Affairs in accepting these amendments to Senate Bill 818. The amendment that we're going to be dealing with is whether or not the three lines or lines between 3 and 6 on page 9 should come out.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Senate or the C-20 amendments.
Representative Hansen moves the C-20 amendments to Senate Bill 818 be adopted. Is there discussion on the C-20 amendments? Is there objection? Hearing none, they are adopted into Senate Bill 818. The Chair would also accept a motion to move forward Senate Bill 818. Before we do that, Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chair, I think the next step would be to move adoption of conceptual amendments for the appropriation and the expenditure limitation language. So move conceptual amendments to appropriate $124,915 general fund and add federal funds expenditure limitation of $124,915 federal funds for the Department of Human Services for carrying out the provisions of Section 13 and 21 of this Act.
Ms. Hansen.
I would move the conceptual amendments for the fund adjustments to carry out the legislation.
President Hansen moves the conceptual amendment as described by our LFO analyst Baker, which would include $124,915 of general fund and $124,915 of federal fund to provide funding for sections 13 and 21 of the Senate Bill 818 as amended. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Representative Wisnett.
Discussion, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mrs. Baker, I mean, Section 21, Section 13 by itself, and this money's going for both Section 13 and Section 21, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, Section 13, the cost is estimated at $40,000 general fund and $40,000 federal fund. And then Section 21 is estimated at $84,915 general fund and $84,915 federal fund.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Mrs. Baker, the Section 13, I can understand that, and I think I'm not an expert in this area, but I have some experience, and looks like for 13, that's $80,000 to develop guidelines. That seems a little high. We're 21. I don't know how you're going to develop a plan to do all this stuff for $150,000 or $60,000. I mean, Section 21 is a big task. DHS has worked these numbers, and they think that they're not just going to that they're going to be able to give us something that's going to really be helpful to children and families.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, the department may be able to address this better than I, but I would say that the estimate is just that, an estimate based on a preliminary look at what needs to be done. Some of these things they may already have work underway in, and so there's not an additional fiscal for that. Also, if the costs are more or less than are estimated, there is always the rebalance mechanism so that they can identify any changes in those cost estimates during the biennium and come back to the emergency board and adjust that appropriately.
No, I'm sure they'll come back to the emergency board and reduce the amount.
Okay. Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none? So ordered. Are there any other?
Now move the bill.
Okay, now we're ready to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 818 as amended to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Representative Hansen moves Senate Bill 818 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Full House Committee on Budget.
Just the House Committee. Just the House Committee on Budget. Due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Need a carrier? Anyone want to carry this? Okay. All right. Mr. Hansen carries. Are there any other items that need to come up for us?
So, Mr. Baker, we're going back to this instead of.